I can see now that if I hadn't deserted Speedycut that night, hadn't been rude to Bismarck, hadn't set Jack Gully on to give him a beating, and finally hadn't taken my spite out on Lola by peaching on her to Ranelagh, without all these ifs, I would have been spared one of the most frightening and incredible experiences of my life. Another glorious chapter in the heroic career of Harry Flashman would not have been written, and neither would a famous novel. However, I've seen too much of life to fret over ifs and buts. There's nothing you can do about them. And if you find yourself at the end of the day an octogenarian with money in the bank and drink in the house, well, you'd be a fool to wish that things had fallen out differently. Anyway, I was home again in London in 47, with cash in my pocket for once. My own cash, too. Dishonestly got, but no dirtier than the funds which old Morrison, my father-in-law, doled out as charity to keep us respectable, for my wee daughter's sake. His wee daughter, my Elspeth, was as pleased to see me as she ever was. We still suited very well between the sheets, however much she was playing loose with her admirers. I'd ceased worrying about that, too. However, when I arrived home, hoping for a few months' rest, to recover from the effects of a pistol ball which had been dug out of the small of my back, there was a nasty shock awaiting me. My dear parents-in-law, Mr. and Mrs. Morrison of Paisley, were now in permanent residence in London. I hadn't seen much of them, thank God, since I'd married their beautiful, empty-headed trollop of a daughter several years before, when I was a young subaltern in Cardigan's Hussars. We had detested each other then, they and I, and time hadn't softened the emotion on either side. To make matters worse, my father was away from home. In the past year or two, the old fella had been hitting the bottle pretty hard, and pretty hard for him meant soaking up liquor in every waking moment. Once or twice they'd had to put him away in a place in the country where the booze was sweated out of him and the pink mice which nibbled at his fingers and toes were shooed away. Well, that was what he said, anyway. But it seemed that they kept coming back, and he was off getting another cure. "A fine thing," sniffed old Morrison. "We were at dinner on my first evening home, and I had hoped to have it in bed with Elspeth. But, of course, we had to do the polite by her parents. A fine thing, indeed. He'll drunk himself into the grave, I suppose." "Probably," says I. "His father and grandfather did, so I don't see why he shouldn't." Mrs. Morrison, who in defiance of probability had grown with the years even more like a vulture, gave a gasp of disgust at this, and old Morrison said he didn't doubt that the son of the house would follow in his ancestors' besotted footsteps. "Shouldn't wonder," says I, helping myself to claret. "I've got a better excuse than they had." "And what does that mean, sir?" bridled old Morrison. I didn't bother to tell him, so he started off on a great rant about ingratitude and perversity and the dissolute habits of myself and my family, and finished up with his age-old lamentation about his daughter having married a wastrel and a ruffian who hadn't even the decency to stay at home with his wife like a Christian but must be forever wandering like Ishmael. "Hold on," says I, for I was sick of this. "Since I married your daughter, I've been twice abroad on my country's service, and on the first occasion, at least, I came home with a good deal of credit. I'll wager you weren't slow to boast about your distinguished son-in-law when I came back from India in 42. "And what have you made of it?" sneers he. "What are you, a captain still, and like to remain one? You're never tired of reminding Elspeth in your letters that you keep this family, this house, and the rest of it. Buy me a majority if military rank means so much to you. Damn your impudence!" says he. "Is it no enough that I keep you and your drunken father out of the poor's house where you belong?" "I'd have thought so," says I. "But if you want me to shoot up the military tree as well, why, it costs money, you know." "Aye, well, deal's the money you'll get from me," snaps he. "Enough is being spent on wanton folly as it is.